This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Get charged up for action that'll shock your system.
Tell me that's not cool.
An unstoppable superhero and his crew embark on impossible missions and will bring mutated villains to justice.
When static's in the house, bad guys better step off.
Pull the plug on crime with the adventures of Static Shock. Yeah!
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 273 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our Twitter/X account. I'm just forever going to call it Twitter. Twitter account. And I'm just shifting this to the man that runs our social media empire. It's Liam. Liam, as we talked about last week, we are here sitting in a month of Static Shock reviews, and it's sort of you know how they do those backdoor pilots on television, where it's a sneaky way of trying to sell you on something without really telling you. Well, we did like a backdoor theme month here for the month of August, and it all sort of centers around one man who happens to be appearing on our program today.
That's right, Cal. So every episode we will be reviewing this month, every episode of Static Shock, is in fact written by the same person, and that is the great Len Yulee. And the reason that we specifically picked that writer is, of course, that he was generous enough to spend quite a bit of time with us. We have a long-form interview with Len coming later in the month, and we'll actually be sprinkling in some excerpts from that are relevant to today's episode, that being Shebang.
That is right, Liam. So we have not only a theme with Mr. Yulee's episodes being featured this month, but we have some reoccurring characters that will also be popping up. We had a fun one last week. If you didn't get a chance to check that one out, a very, very fun homage to the classic zombie cult classic genre. So you want to go back and check that one out. This week, though, we are moving forward a season, as we are now officially in season 3 with this episode's review. And as you mentioned, it is titled after the character Shebang, or Shebang, depending on, as we learn in our little talk with Len, depending on your prerogative, how you want to pronounce it, you know, it's kind of left up to the interpreter. But we do know that Mr. Burnett, Alan Burnett, responsible for naming the character, did so with a tongue firmly planted in his cheek. So as Mr. Yulee was happy enough to share with us. But yes, before we get into our breakdown of the episode today, as well as some of our tidbits from Mr. Yulee, we will, of course, get the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today. That is where you will find a collection of podcasts just ready to tickle your ears. You get some great content from the folks over at Watchtower Database, who have their Jump on the Batwagon podcast. I'm pretty sure they just switch to Superman. So is it going to be Jump on the Super Wagon here soon? I don't know. You'll have to tune in to find out. And you can only find out on the Pod Tower YouTube channel. So head over to there. Not only do you get the Jump on the Batwagon, maybe Super Wagon podcast, but you also get the entire Tim Talk podcast, which has already done a review of this very same episode that we'll be tackling today. And then, of course, you get our entire catalog as well, all in one convenient area. We invite you to head on over today and subscribe at youtube.com/thepodtower.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Shebang, which was written by Alan Burnett and Len Yulee, directed by Vic Dalshell. At least according to the DCAU wiki, I can't confirm that because I don't believe there's actually one credited in the actual on-screen credits of this episode. But music by Richard Wolf and animation by Dong Wu. And that synopsis reads as such. There's a new hero in town with mad athletic skills and the attitude and ego to match. Static and Gear are divided as to if they want to hurt it. That's a terrible sentence. Static and Gear are divided as to if they want her help and is she really what she seems?
Oh man, it started out with such promise and then really fell apart at the end. It's like when the Patriots played the Falcons and the, you know. Yeah, that was they see me after class for that one. IMDb synopsis. We'll need to review some of your grammatical mistakes with regards to that one. But of course, we will get our own synopsis for this episode, which originally aired here in the United States on the Kids WB on February the 15th, 2003, meaning we just passed, get this, the 20-year anniversary of this episode's debut. Before we do, though, we will, of course, get some of the background. As we mentioned at the top, Mr. Yulee was, you know, we were fortunate enough to be joined by him. He was generous with his time, and we have a long-form interview that we'll be dropping later in the month as a bonus episode. But we'd love to give you a little bit of background about Mr. Yulee in his own words from our interview a little bit earlier this month. Let's throw it to ourselves from the past.
All right. And as mentioned, we are very lucky to be joined today by a legendary writer in animation, that being the great Mr. Len Yulee. Len, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me, guys. I really appreciate it. And as I said before we started, I think you've probably interviewed everybody I've ever worked with. Some of this may sound familiar if we cross the streams a little. So apologize for the redundancy straight
just,
off.
You're just corroborating each other's stories, you know?
That's right. Yeah, it's our story, we're sticking with it.
That's right. So before we launch into some more sort of DCAU themed topics, we'd like to just start by asking sort of what were your origin story, so to speak, getting into as a writer and specifically as a writer in animation.
Oh, well, okay. It's, I hope you have an extra hour. basically, I became an animation writer quite by accident. Mm. I started out as a wannabe sitcom writer. I had my first sale on a sitcom when I was 21. I was a junior at UCLA in the film school. And I saw a show got picked up and it was called Holmes and Yo-Yo. Nobody remembers it, but it was 13 episodes on ABC. Two cops, one of whom was a robot. So, you know, clearly right up my alley straight away. But it was by the guys who had done Get Smart. So these were like comedy gods for me. Mm-hmm. So I read the show, got picked up by, this would never happen today, but I got a chance to, I called the office, the production office. And I said, can I read a copy of the pilot script? And the woman there, the director of development, says, sure. Like this would never happen. armies of lawyers who would make that not happen.
Right, say.
So I got a copy of the script. I read it. I said, oh boy. And I wrote a story, not even a script, mind you. And I'd been writing, you know, spec scripts and all that sort of thing. So then I sat on it. Now, I have to say, at this point, I am a commuter. I am living at home. I am taking the bus to UCLA every day. And what are they going to do? They're not going to hire a guy in college with no credit.
Sure.
So I sat on the story. And my mom said, okay, I tell you what, I'll mail it for you. Okay, mom. that's going to happen. 2 days later, the story editor calls me on a Friday and says, I'm going to make your weekend. So I said, really? And so what he did was they took, he and his producer partner, they rammed my story together with some other material they already owned from a guy named John Landis. Not sure whatever happened to him, but anyway, you know, quite frankly, it was probably in pre-production on Animal House, so I don't think he missed the assignment too terribly. But anyway, so I got a chance to write the script, and you know, I was cocky. I was 21. I thought I knew what I was doing, and I was I it was not a, I didn't do a great job. Let's put it that way. But, you know, it was a first assignment. That was great. Following year, I had a TV series format optioned by a production company. It was about the first Black president of the United States. Like that could ever happen.
Right.
But well, it was 1977. You know, it's ancient history. So
right.
2 years, two assignments, graduating college. This is going to be easy. What a great career. Piece of cake. Rocket to the moon. 3 years of radio silence followed. Nothing happened.
Wow.
So for you know, if you want to say I was an overnight success, that's true if your definition of overnight is 10 years.
Wow.
So bumped around a few assignments hither and yon, lots of, you know, jobs in the meantime, office jobs, working at a lawyer's office, working as a producer's assistant on Benson, the sitcom.
Oh, yes.
Writing industrials and corporate shows. And that's where I learned how to be a professional writer, because you're writing for very little money. You're writing for make the client happy, writing, you know, taking notes. So that's how I really learned, because whatever modicum of talent I might have had, I didn't have the skill set, the professionalism that, you know, at the beginning. So that was the series of lucky first breaks. Anyway, sorry, rambling on. Eventually, one of the mom and pop companies I worked for in the industrial and corporate thing, the pop was Michael Rye, a voice actor from radio, who was the voice of Duke Igthorne on the Gummy Bears.
Ooh,
okay.
So a great comic villain. And so he introduced me to the story editor, Jim Magon. And Jim hired me to write a freelance Gummy Bears episode, and then hired me to write a freelance DuckTales episode, which, by the way, was called Where No Duck Has Gone Before. You'll see another thread running through that's a Star Trek fanboy thing here. Anyway, so, and then Disney TV Animation was ramping up because they were doing the DuckTales series, and then that was going to be followed by the Disney Afternoon, all those syndicated 65 episode, a 2 hour block of television 5 days a week. Again, unheard of today, but by then it was like, wow. So they were hiring people left and right, and so I got a chance to go on staff there. And just to put a button on the origin story, 2 weeks after I signed my contract at Disney, I heard from two story editors I had met on the picket line in 1985 for the Writers Guild, and they asked about my availability for the CBS version of Charles in Charge. Yes, I never got a chance to work for Scott Baio, work with him, because I had already signed this contract and being the Boy Scout. I wasn't, oh no, I couldn't possibly. And that was the fork in the road, and that's when I became an animation writer. And so 47 years in the Writers Guild, 37 years in writing animation. And, you know, on balance, I guess it worked out. You know, I got a chance to write, you know, 260 some episodes of television. And and eventually I'll get it right. You know, you know, in the meantime, I got a chance to work with some wonderful people on a lot of great shows, including some of the shows we're going to talk about today. So, and that's my long-winded version of, so how did you get here? I'm still trying to figure it out. Sorry.
That's incredible. Wow. What a, that's like so many who's of people that are in Hollywood that you either cross paths with, worked with.
I am the Zelig of animation. I have worked with show business generally. I've worked with, or just alongside, just a glancing blow with ideal people. And, you know, I'm just sitting here being, you know, the working slob shoveling through into the next assignment. But it's been weird. I could go into stories, you know, had I grown up in, say, Detroit, I would have gone to work for the Ford Motor Company, right?
Yep.
Company town. I grew up here in Los Angeles, and even weirder than that, on the wrong side of the tracks in Beverly Hills. You know, after the parents' divorce, we struggled to stay there, but mom wanted to have us in good schools anyway. Yeah. So I grew up with all of these showbiz kids, you know, the sons and daughters of TV stars and studio heads and things like that. So company town, no other skills. Of course I'm going to want to be a writer.
Of course, yeah.
You know, the first episode, the first script I wrote was in sixth grade. It was a Star Trek script. I already had the pointy ears, so you know, I could do that. And so I've been doing this. I wrote plays musicals in high school and student films. And like probably most of the people you've talked with, it seemed like the thing that I, what other choice did I have?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway,
so there you go. That's my sad tale.
No, whenever the book comes out, we'll be the first one to buy it because that sounds
it'll be a coloring book. But
all right. Well, jumping off of that, let's fast forward the reason why we're having you on the show here. Just even though that's an incredibly fascinating story, spoiler alert, we're a DC Animated Universe podcast. So we're here about the DC Animated Universe. And of course, the majority of which came from your work on Static Shock. So can you tell us a little bit about how did you get, you know, started on that project? Fast forward a little bit from where we left off in your origin story to getting assigned to that, and then the work that you did specifically. We're going to talk a little bit about the shebang episodes today, but yeah, how did you get involved with Static Shock, and in your experience, especially for what that show was at the time, I think culturally what it means even today.
Yes.
What's it like having worked on that episode or that show, and how did you get there?
Well, have to roll back to when I was at Disney for 5.5 years. One of the people I worked with there was Alan Burnett.
Never heard of him.
let me explain. Alan is as you well know, he's the undersung hero of the DC Animated Universe. Yes. He's a tremendously nice fellow and an extraordinarily good writer and a terrific showrunner. But anyway, Alan and I were working on things like Gummy Bears and Tailspin and shows like that together. And then he went back briefly. I think he went back to Hanna-Barbera, but then landed at Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And so he was running the Batman. I never got a chance to write on the Batman animated series, but of course thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
But anyway, so eventually when I was no longer at Disney and had done some superhero stuff for Eric Liewald, also with whom I'd worked at Disney, but then became the showrunner on X-Men, the animated series. So, and of course I'd read comic books, mostly DC comic books, in fact, when I was a kid. So I knew the lingo there too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I ended up, Alan was then running, in addition to everything else in the Batman series and the Superman, and all, he was also in charge of the, Static Shock after it had been developed, and he'd been playing a key role in that. Anyway, so he was kind enough to hire me to work on that. And so I ended up writing, 16 of those on Static Shock. And so I was there as a freelancer, as a story editor, as a freelancer, sort of the arc of the thing, but got a chance to work in all four seasons. And as you well know, it is a spectacular series. It holds up extremely well. Yep. And part of that is, of course, the origins of it, because, people like the late Dwayne McDuffie and Dennis Cowan and all of their cohorts had created this wonderful universe, the Dakotaverse, for Milestone Comics, which was, the first African-American-owned comic book company. Mm-hmm. And they did amazing things there, and Static was developed as an animated series, brought a little younger and things like that, but I had an affinity for it. I got a chance to write quippy dialogue, which is kind of my thing. So Alan was kind enough to bring me in and let me do all sorts of wonderful stuff, and that's also where I met Dwayne McDuffie, for whom I eventually also worked on a couple of iterations of the Ben 10 series over at Cartoon Network.
Nice.
And we can go on for another hour about what an extraordinary genius, honest to God genius, Dwayne McDuffie was.
Yeah.
I digress. Working on Static Shock was a wonderful experience with some very talented people. And because, again, of the showrunner in charge, in this case, Alan, later on the Ben 10 series with Dwayne and Glenn Murakami, you got a chance to work on a show that was, a kids' action adventure show. And great fun, and everybody after the treasure and things blow up, and we get to say something. But also, we got a chance to do stuff that was about, I'm sorry if this sounds ostentatious, but the human condition, about stuff that matters, that comes from the heart. Mm-hmm. And so, Dwayne and Ellen, they wrote a show that got a Humanitas Award about gun violence, about bringing a gun to school. Mm-hmm. I got to write an episode called Frozen Out that was about... mental illness and the homeless. Yep. Now, this doesn't sound like kiddie fare, does it?
Not at all.
When you have people who are willing to go to bat and say, okay, yeah, we're not going to do another villain of the week. Yeah, we can do those, and did them very, very well indeed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
But we got a chance to write things that mattered to us, and within the confines of, you know, Long Underwear Show. Mm-hmm. So we're just, you know... That, again, one of those things that was so lucky for me that I got a chance to work with such brilliant people, all at the top of their game, you know. And so there were a lot of shows that I worked on where that has been the case. Static is one of them. I consider the Static and the Ben 10 runs for me, again, mostly freelancing, particularly on the Ben 10. But I got a chance to work on stuff that mattered, that I can look at with pride, and were very well made. So, you know, I came out ahead in that regard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Liam, that was awesome. Love learning a little bit about how Mr. Yuli got into the business, and certainly some of the credits. He's got a laundry list of credits on his resume. You know, I think just one of those shows alone would be enough to impress someone. But the amount of things that he's done, the projects that he's worked on, getting how he got into the business, and his passion, even today, this many years into his career, is palpable, and it's contagious. And man, what a fun time we had with him.
Yeah, just a really smart and kind and funny guy, and it was just great talking with him and learning a little bit about not only his personal origin, but just kind of some of the inner workings of the business, and his getting the start on Static as well. Just tremendously fun conversation. One of our, I think I could speak for both of us when I say one of our favorite interviews we've ever done. And can't wait for all of our listeners to hear the full conversation when we drop it later this month. But we were just so excited. We wanted to share a little bit of a few relevant excerpts about Static and about Len's origins in this crazy industry, just a little bit early to whet the appetite.
That's right, a little appetizer that we will again drop on your feeds later in the month. You'll get the full length interview, and of course we will be sharing some additional tidbits next week as well. But Liam, we will get into our own breakdown of this week's episode, and then of course is kicking things off with our first category, which will be plot. So let's do our own plot synopsis, hopefully a little bit better than that mess of a IMDb synopsis. But we kick things off with a very, very interesting place. Static and Gear are in the midst of a severe weather event, a windstorm that's kicked up in Dakota. So the skies are not so sunny as we're used to. It's raining, there's wind happening, and there's some sort of event. I didn't catch it. It's kind of like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, but it's some other event happening at this amphitheater that involves them using these giant inflatable floats. Needless to say, they have the workers that are charged with kind of tying these giant balloon animals and props down are having no fun at all. They're losing the battle against Mother Nature. And unfortunately, this leads to not only Static and Gear having to sort of corral the actual balloons themselves, but also one of the gentlemen who gets whisked away while carrying on, holding on to the tie ropes.
Nice weather!
Yeah, if you're into hurricanes.
Uh-oh.
Whoa. Houston, we have a rocking chair. best seat in the house. And the biggest. Whoa, Bessie. That's what I call a moo-F-O.
Ouch.
Help me!
I'll fry the egg. You rope the...
Would you stop already?
Though I do admit it was kind of funny.
Chill.
And this, as Static and Richie are in hot pursuit, unfortunately, Static is unable to assist them as he sort of gets handled by Mother Nature himself and blown out of the way and gets knocked by one of the balloons. So it appears that it could be curtains for this poor worker, but stepping up is a strange new masked hero who bounces in and is able to not only save our poor worker, but she's able to corral the giant balloon animal to make sure no further damage is done. And once Static and Gear have fully recovered, they catch up to her and they are shocked to see a new person on their turf. Static is sort of immediately showing signs of jealousy, and he, as he's wont to do, we know that he's a bit territorial. We've learned that in the past episodes when Richie got his superpowers, that he's not exactly open to sharing the acclaim of the Dakota people. So he's immediately suspect, not necessarily welcoming of this new person, but she doesn't really seem to mind, as she sort of relishes in the fact that she was able to outdo Static and save the day. So we cut now to back to school, and Static, by the way, Gear immediately wants to add her to their team, and Static is having no parts of it. A very funny interaction between the two of them. And that's when we cut back to the school. And wouldn't you know it, we have a new person that's arrived at school. It is a Shanice Vale who has arrived, and she's introduced by Daisy and Frida.
Mystery Metagirl saves city workers. Can you believe it? We hardly got a mention.
At least she's on our side. And who knows? Maybe she could join the team.
I hope you're talking about some basketball team.
I didn't think she was that bad.
The way she showed up on our turf, thinking she's so hot and all? Look, man, I know trouble when I see it.
Well, that beats me. I can only smell trouble when it's brewing. Except when I have a cold.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Daisy.
Hey, Frida.
This is Shanice Vale. She just transferred in.
Ah, our condolences.
Hey, Shanice.
Hello. We're all in the same PE class. In fact, we were talking at the soccer tryouts when your names came up.
Oh, okay, you've twisted my arm. I will coach girls soccer.
And I'll hand out the towels.
Thanks, but no. We were talking about bowling. We want a rematch between the boys and the girls.
What, the last time wasn't humiliating enough?
Yeah, you should call yourselves the Gutter Ball Brigade.
We've been practicing, and we're this close to talking Shanice into playing with us, too.
You bowl?
A little.
They happen to mention that they are recruiting her to their girls team for their boys versus girls bowling night. And we get a cut directly to said bowling night, where it is very clear that this new girl Shanice is either extremely talented at bowling, or she's gifted in a way that maybe nobody else would suspect. She seems to be hitting strike after strike after strike, and as she's going for her perfect game, she's about to go up, and everyone's noticing, and everybody's super excited and cheering her on, and she happens to look back and sees a pair of adults who kind of give her a scowl and shake their head at her, and She sort of throws the bowling ball directly into the gutter, not only blowing it for her team, but missing the perfect game. And she leaves sort of embarrassed and dejected. And it's very quickly established that Daisy and Frida are also concerned, as they think that maybe, well, she just kind of got nervous because her parents showed up. We learned that it was, in fact, her parents there watching. But I think both viewers and maybe Static and Richie have other thoughts as to what just might be going on here with the parents, as everybody sort of begins stroking their chin.
That's right. So we cut to the next day, where we see Hot Streak is on a rampage, just attacking a movie theater of all things, because he didn't care for what they done. Imagine somebody throwing a tantrum because some sci-fi movie they saw wasn't as good as the ones that they made when he was a kid.
We did remind you, this was 20 years ago that this was done, yet, as is so often with the DCAU, things relevant 20 years ago, still accurate and relevant today.
That's right. It's not just The Simpsons that gets credit for being so prescient. But yes, there's another battle ensues there, with Static and Gear being a bit overmatched before Shebang arrives and helps defeat him. And of course, right as they're talking, some reporters arrive on the scene and try to address Static, Gear, and their new partner. And Shebang quickly gets out of there when she sees that there are cameras present. And then we cut back to her house there, where we kind of begin to understand what's going on, as Shanice's parents are sort of reading her the riot act, telling her that she can't be going out as the superhero Shebang, and she's arguing that she's not, you know, being this sort of mousy, quiet girl isn't who she is, and she needs to go out and express herself and be herself in the real world. But her parents kind of keep telling her that it's so dangerous.
So it was you.
Shanice, you can't do this. You can't be a superhero.
Why not?
You know perfectly well why not. Because they'll find out.
They won't. This whole city is filled with superpowered teens. It's the perfect place for me.
No. They'll know your abilities. They'll see right through this Halloween costume.
And then they'll find us.
Then let them. I don't care. I can't hide anymore. I can't go on pretending to be some quiet little wallflower nobody notices. I wasn't made for that.
Shanice!
Come back, please!
And we see that there's a mysterious agent for a mysterious agency has been tracking Shebang, and actually trails Static, who accidentally leads them to Shebang's house, and they break into her parents' house, and using some nefarious knockout gas are able to kidnap Shanice and take her away, and that sort of sets up our final act.
That's right. Yeah, we get Static and Richie headed over to Shanice's house, as Static has this heart to heart with her, where she reveals that she's not a Bang baby and that she's retiring, as you mentioned, from the Shebang, from the whole Shebang persona. This leads Static and Richie to her house to have a conversation with her parents, to find out just exactly who she is. And that's where we learn that Shanice is, in fact, telling the truth. She's not a Bang baby, as Static and Richie both assume that she was. She is, in fact, a lab experiment. And she was created in a lab by her parents, who were both scientists.
We built every chromosome from scratch. She was designed to have incredible strength and agility.
Well, you got that part right.
Naturally. The company had plans for Shanice. They wanted to clone her. Make more. She was a walking blueprint worth billions to them. There was just one problem.
We fell in love with her. She wasn't a lab specimen to us. She was our baby.
So we took her and went into hiding. We've been running ever since.
Why didn't you go to the police?
You know how the media work. It'd be a free-for-all. They treat her like a freak.
And once they kind of grew her out of the petri dish, they developed this relationship with her and realized that they actually loved and cared for this young child and didn't want her being cloned. She's basically like, it's very similar to the mid-90s origin story of Superboy. She's
a little bit, yeah,
made in a lab, and for nefarious purposes, of course. The government wants to use her, this lab wants to create her, clone her and make weapons out of her, and the creators feel bad, they get a guilty conscience, so they take her away and try and escape with her. And so now the lab is sending people after her in order to not only recuperate its creation, but also to punish her parents. And that's why they want her to be in hiding, and they're not about her being on television and all of that. So unfortunately, we learn that, of course, through her appearances on the media, she left some gloves behind in her interaction with Hot Streak that were picked up by this agent that was tracking her. They were able to determine that it was her, follow her, find her, and then, as you mentioned, take her into custody. So as Static and Gear are inside Shanice's house with her parents, Backpack happens to pick up some activity that's happening outside. I love it. Richie says he's picking up some electronic activity, and then they open the window, and it's guys in gas masks. It's like, it's not electronic activity. They weren't being very conspicuous. I mean, they were being very conspicuous. They're walking around with these giant gas masks on, attempting to, approaching the house. They're not being inconspicuous at all. But yeah, so that leads Static and Richie to go outside. Static uses his powers to static cling them to the side of the big metal surveillance van. Then he and Richie break into said van, and using Backpack to reverse GPS track where the van came from, they head back to, they follow its trail, which is to the airport. And then that leads them to a plane that is taking off just as they arrive. And they are in hot pursuit of this airplane. It appears that the airplane is too fast, but Static is able to dig a little bit deeper and power up. He kind of does the Dragon Ball Z thing, right? Where he rears his head back and his arms wide, and he just calls upon all the power that he's got in order to kind of catch up to this plane. And he's able to kind of grab onto it, and a very fun moment that we can continue to talk about in visuals here in a moment. But he's able to finally get attached to it, open the door, finds Shebang inside, who's been captured by, of course, these agents who have her contained and threatening to take her out. Static attempts to break her out, and he's actually surprised by one of the agents. He didn't see them when he was walking in. This agent has some sort of device that sort of dampens Static's powers, but thankfully his other arm was free. The guy only shot one of his arms, and he's able to break Shanice free. Shanice is able to then break this weapon that the agent had, and is able to team up with Static to overtake him, and then convince the pilot that it's in his best interest at that point to turn the plane around.
Aw, it broke. But don't worry. I'm sure the authorities don't want you damaged either. Too bad.
Let's turn this thing around. Come on. You got two cranky superpower teenagers back here. We run out of peanuts and there's no in-flight movie. Any thoughts?
I'm already heading back.
Good thinking.
Back it up, back it in. Step back. Gonna take it on the chin. Back it up, back it in. Get ready.
You do get a postscript as the plane does land, and then we get back to Shanice with her parents, we're very excited, and it appears that Static and Gear are both now on the same page and willing to add Shanice to their team. But she manages, she breaks the news to both of them that, unfortunately, just like in any good fugitive style show, she and her parents have to be going now. They can't stick around much longer because the authorities can't seem to find everyone involved at the lab. And they can't be watching them 24/7. So they got to put them in what ultimately is a bit of a witness protection program. So she and her family have to leave, but promise that when everything gets sorted out, hey, maybe she'll return one day to help them fight crime. And that's kind of, we get a little bit of an Incredible the Hulk send off as we get some sad piano music playing. And she looks wistfully through the back window of her car as it drives away from Static and Gear. And that's the end of our episode.
Yeah, we end on a it's a little bittersweet ending to our episode. And I think it actually comes, I guess, as we finish the plot recap, we can start getting towards our scores here. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy this episode. And I think one of the reasons I do is because it's set up in a very like classic Static way, which it feels like we're going for like a sitcom type trope of like, you know, battle of the sexes, girls versus boys. Like it starts out with, you know, shebang upstaging Gear and Static when they're, you know, trying to protect everybody during the hurricane and the parade floats are out of control. And then they go to the next day in school where Shanice and Frida and Daisy are all excited because they're beating the boys in bowling and all that. And it feels like we're going one way. And then we just take this dramatic sharp turn and it becomes this like sci-fi espionage story about like clones and government agencies and all of this. It's a really fun left turn that this episode takes. And it takes it in, I think, kind of some pretty exciting and dramatic ways.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Yeah, it does very much feel like some of the same old. And again, this is season 3 of the show. So the sort of, you know, bang baby of the week, so to speak, has kind of been played out here. We're several seasons into it. So the fact that they start out that way and lead you to believe like, all right, here we go. It's a rival for Static. He's not going to get along with her. And then we learn that she's a bang baby. And then maybe they butt heads a little bit. And then she has to save the day at the end of it. And it doesn't go that way. They throw some curveballs in there. And, you know, she's not actually a bang baby. She's the result of an experiment, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very different. And she doesn't, while she does save Static's bacon twice, ultimately the hero and heroes of our show end up saving the day at the end, having to kind of save her bacon. So yeah, I think that it's unpredictably predictable, I would say, how I would describe this episode. Like you're expecting it to follow a certain formula, but it's not, more than likely you've guessed the wrong formula to follow. It follows two different other formulas mixed together. So I like that. I like that it kind of subverted my expectations and you know, kind of threw those curves in there at times. I think that the character of Shanice is very interesting also, because they went, and we'll talk about it a little bit in our voice acting here in a little bit, but they went out of their way to very strongly differentiate Shanice versus Shebang. They're very different characters dynamically. Like her personality is extremely different. And it's she talks about having to kind of to play that up, to be that way. And that's where that fight with her parents comes into play, where she's like, you know, I was made for something more. Like I was given she was literally made, but she was given the abilities to do something greater than to just hide under a rock. And like that's extremely relatable.
Absolutely.
And it can be a bit of a trope that cartoons and kid shows rely on sometimes, but I think that just the way that you really feel like she's being smothered when she's Shanice. Like this she doesn't feel like this character that's quiet and bashful and doesn't want the attention and all that. You can see her, especially when she puts on this costume. It's like, man, that's who she is. She feels this. This is what she's made for. She's made to do this. So I love how they wrote the character to be that different dynamically between her alter ego and her personality as in her everyday life. So yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I like that it sets things up for her to come back. Spoiler alert, she comes back. I like that we have the butting heads, Static, you're continuing that thread of Static being a little bit jealous and not really wanting to share in the glory, and that being like a character flaw that he has, especially because clearly this is somebody that's helping him, that helped save multiple people that Static wouldn't have saved or couldn't have saved. So I like that too, because you also show some of the flaws of your main character too, and it's important that your main characters have some flaws. I think that does matter. So yeah, all that to say, I enjoyed the episode. It's a fun 22 minutes. There's not a lot of straight up action that occurs. I will say that there's it's heavy on the dialogue. It's heavy on the actual story that's happening. You do get the opening scene right off the bat that has some intrigue and some interest with the giant floats and everything, blowing away and the air, the giant air balloons creating havoc. And then you have the culmination of the episode is extremely exciting. Anytime you put something on an airplane, I think that automatically amps up the stakes at that point. So it's certainly exciting at the end there. But the fact that they're able to team up and work together also at the end, you finally see Static embracing the fact that he can work with somebody. He doesn't have to worry about sharing or care about sharing in the glory. So all those reasons, I ended up giving Plot a very strong 8 out of 10. What about you, Liam?
Yeah, I actually gave it the exact same score of 8 out of 10. I just thought this was really solid. It went in unexpected ways. And like you said, you still get that, you still open with Static being kind of really standoffish and feeling a little jealous and upstage. And at the end, he kind of accepts her and along with, Richie, who's kind of on board from moment one and realizes that Static's just being a little bit pigheaded. But yeah, it's a really fun episode. The way it's put together, I love the twists there. And if we could indulge in one of our favorite pastimes, which is headcanoning or retroactive Easter eggs. We don't ever get a name for this agency that cloned Shanice, do we?
I would say in my headcanon / retroactive Easter eggs, this has to be a Cadmus project, right?
Right, like at least a subgroup like the Volcano one, like they maybe wasn't called Cadmus, but it's like a subsidiary, a shell company of some kind.
Absolutely. And
until I'm told otherwise, that's where my head was going.
I like that. Maybe we can get a follow up from Mr. Yuli this week to see if he would co-sign on that as a headcanon since he wrote this story. But yeah, it's a fun episode all the way around. Very, very entertaining. And definitely sets up some threads that maybe we'll cover on another episode this month.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And as you mentioned at the top, Dong Wu, responsible for this week's animation. And we'll, of course, as I think contractually obligated we are to do, whenever we talk about Static, we're in season 3 here, the upgraded sort of higher budget, more cel shading, more streamlined DCAU look. To the DC or to Static. So we automatically, in my book, get an upgrade here because things look better. They look better on the screen to me. It just looks higher quality. It looks like a bigger investment in the product. But what did you think of the visuals for the episode, and what notes did you have as far as things that stuck out that you liked or maybe didn't like?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that really stuck out to me is we get this opening sequence where Shanice is sort of putting on the shebang suit for the first time. And I like the shebang design. Like, I think it's perfect for for what this is, where it's this girl, as we come to find out, who's has these abilities, but's never really gotten a chance to express them. So she's in a very like makeshift costume. It's like she's got like spandex on and like some boots, and then it looks like she made a cape and a mask out of like bed sheets and stuff. So like it's very like thrown together. It reminds me a little bit of the Burnside Batgirl costume.
Oh, right on. Absolutely.
About 10 years ago, where it's a little bit more, it's more stripped down. It's a superhero suit. There's no doubt about that, but it's a little bit more stripped down and a little bit more, I don't want to use the word realistic because, you know, it's a superhero show, but it feels more like this is something a kid with no real resources could cobble together in, you know, in her bedroom. So I like the look of Shebang overall. And then, that opening sequence where it's just her kind of showing off her abilities, where she's just running and jumping over rooftops and swinging on telephone poles and flag poles and just swinging all kind of jumping all over the city. And then her kind of stopping right as she gets to the edge of the building and looking out and kind of seeing this concert venue wherever in the distance where this hurricane's beginning to kick up and the parade floats are getting out of control and then static and gear kind of flying in. But yeah, I think that opening sequence is really what is probably the biggest one to me that stood out as far as just showing off what Shanice can do and then her first interactions with static and gear.
Yeah, I mean, a classic comic book trope that still works to this day. You have regular sized human beings interacting with these giant oversized objects, you know, giant chairs and giant cows and a giant Humpty Dumpty balloon. Like, it works. It's interesting. It's visually, it's eye catching, you know, all of that works. And you have these heroes with superpowers interacting with them. What a fun setting, not only for us as adults, but any kid that tunes in to watch that is going to immediately be just absolutely blown away by the idea of superheroes interacting with giant, you know, floating balloons that look like real life inanimate objects or animate objects. So yeah, I think kicking things off, kind of giving you the overall who this person is and her power set, I really, really liked that as well. I thought that was certainly a good way to kick things off. I wholeheartedly agree with you. If she comes out wearing like a full costume that looks like, you know, a Bryan Singer X-Men costume where she's got like the leather or any other superhero movie from the last, I don't know what, 30 years or whatever it's been, where it's, you know, that fake leather cosplay look. Yeah. Then that wouldn't be very believable because she's supposed to be a teenager that is doing this on her own without any help from anybody. So of course she's going to use materials that are available and create this like red, this sort of garish red and purple combination of colors. So yeah, I agree with you. It does work very well for the character. I like her design. And again, I think in order to communicate the character difference between when she's Shebang versus when she's Shanice, you know, Shebang carries herself in such a way, in the way that she moves, in the way that she's talks and interacts with Static and Richie, or you know, Static and Gear. You know, once she kind of handles Hot Streak, like she's extremely confident in the powers that she has, the way that she walks, talks, interacts. All that is communicated through that visual medium of this is somebody who knows the power that they have, believes in themselves, and are experiencing life to the fullest when they get to kind of use these skills, right? And then when she's kind of bogged down and put under a basket, so to speak, she's hunched over, she, you know, can't really make eye contact, she's got this closed off, shy appearance that she kind of is communicated with how they made her move and walk and talk in that way too. So something else, just little that was done to continue to communicate that idea of her being stifled in this alter ego, just a cool attention to detail with that. I thought it was very funny. that in her interaction with Hot Streak, she mentions him needing a belt for his pants because his pants are sagging too much. And then he ends up being undone by, you know, her throwing him by his pants, essentially. Like, she launches him out of his pants into the fountain. I thought that was an amusing little bit there. What kid isn't going to laugh at the bad guy, you know, getting stripped down to his boxer shorts? The only thing that was missing was like arts.
Yes, that's the only thing missing, but it's a it's a great joke. Literally hoisted by his own belt straps in this case.
Yeah, that was I enjoyed that. I liked I liked Static's use of his static cling against the agents once they're inside the Vale's household. I thought Backpack got a couple of cool visualizations of it. Not only when it enters that surveillance van and you see it walking around and then plugging into the system, and then you kind of get the reverse GPS tracking used for that. But right before that, as it kind of picks up on the surveillance van being outside, it projects onto Richie's face, and you kind of get the flipped, reversed view of it, kind of like an Iron Man in a Marvel movie type display on it. And it's, you know, it's perfectly clear what's happening. There's a screen that pops up and it's moving. I thought that visualization was fun too. I really liked the final scene. Also, I mentioned the brief homage maybe to like a classic Eastern animation superhero power up where Static really has to dig deep into his power grid, so to speak, in order to power up enough to catch up to the airplane in that final sequence. And then he and Shebang get to do a tag team maneuver to our buzz cut agent where they both tag team him. She throws him up against this netting in the back of the airplane, and Static shoots him with his electricity. And I thought that was kind of cool, really sealing the deal that these two are working together, and they're ready to work together as a fine oiled machine. So yeah, for all those reasons, I really enjoyed the episode. I think some of the little things that they did made up for the fact that there wasn't a lot of long action beats to the episode. You know, that it really relied more on the storytelling, as I said at the beginning, and some of the more subtle things they did. But still, I think that they told a great story, and I ended up giving visuals and animation another 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, actually, I went just one point higher. I went 9 out of 10 for mine. I just think that opening sequence is so fun, and I think the actual animation, like I said, on the parkour sequence for Shebang is so strong, and then the great hashtag Kate movement in that sequence as well, and then I like the Hot Streak sequence is fun, and then that final bit, really love the bit of Static kind of powering up, and just the way they kind of visualize it, like whereas, you know, the power kind of all generates from his hands, and then he kind of starts with his hands up, and then the energy starts shooting out, and he kind of throws his hands down to his side, and you can kind of follow the electricity going from his hands down his body and then down to the bottom of his saucer and firing out like exhaust, from a rocket or something as he's speeding up towards the plane. I think the way they visualize his, his increase in power for his little speed boost there is so cool. And the final little fight there on the plane is great, where Static gets captured by like the taser cuff, and then is able to just kind of fire off one last blast to free Shebang, I think is great as well. So yeah, just a lot of really, really fun visual tricks in this episode, even as you said, despite it being a more narrative driven episode than an action based one.
I will say I failed to mention also the sequence that occurs right before Shebang gets captured by the agents on the rooftop. There is a little scuffle that occurs there. We get some more action that occurs in that scene. But there is this really touching moment, as I mentioned, when we're talking about the plot, where Static and Shebang are she's decided at this point, this is after her parents have told her she has to hang up her cape, so to speak. And she's there kind of after she's run away, coming to terms with this idea that she has to really go full time with suppressing this you know, suppressing her powers and her desire to be a superhero. And, you know, there's she's standing on this gargoyle and Static flies up and they have this initial banter where it feels like Static is going to be really apprehensive towards her. And then it's communicated again in her Shebang costume. She's kind of reverted to that Shanice, like, downtrodden, sad, bashful, depressed type of look, which is interesting because you're seeing her as the superhero, which you're used to so far seeing her kind of be this vibrant soul in this persona, but now she's downtrodden, depressed. There's some good hashtag Kate movement in that scene also, but yeah, there's some good stuff to be had for sure in our animation and visuals. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And of course, that is done this week, as it has been quite often, by Richard Wolff, not the Law and Order one, as we always point out, the other Richard Wolff. Liam, longtime listeners will know that, you know, the things that I dislike the most about Static is the soundtrack, just because, not because the music itself is bad, but because to me, when you throw in lyrics to a soundtrack, it just gets very distracting, especially like if it would be one thing. And obviously I would never expect a children's cartoon in the early 2000s to pay for licensed music. So you're not going to get like Lou Bega or something like that, or whatever, whatever was the soundtrack of 2002, 2003 to play for your soundtrack of your Static episode. But, you know, it just gets a little distracting when you just have the same refrain going over and over and over again. We've talked about Hot Streak's song, Fight Fire with Fire, which, believe it or not, plays during this episode. And you get that refrain over and over and over again, Fight Fire with Fire. You know, it kind of drains you after a little while. However, we've gotten to the point where I've seen so much Static now that I'm starting to kind of come around the opposite way, where I've disliked it so much that now it's so funny that I kind of just pump my fist every time there's a goofy soundtrack. And this episode did not disappoint from the get-go. We get a Shebang theme, which it's like a Mary J. Blige or Destiny's Child or something. Like
100%, yeah.
A very... R&B soulful sound with the refrain "I'm so fly," and this is as right. Is soaring across your television screen, and that's the other funny thing is that so often it just is describing whatever you're seeing. So it's like they watch the episode and they're writing the soundtrack and they're like, all right, what are the lyrics to this song? All right, what's happening at this point? They're flying, we're gonna ride. I'm so fly. That's good.
As the great Garth Ferengi once said, I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards. there's nothing but literal interpretations of what's happening on screen in our music, and I love that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I will say there's my favorite song, however, of the entire episode had to be as the plane is taking off and we get pack it up, pack it in, step back or take it on the chin. And it's like this angry, like we always compare it to like DMX or something like that. It's like an angry, like sort of passionate, deep sounding, like rapper that's coming across. And it's just like, it's heavy. He's angry. And he wants you to pack it in or you're going to take it on the chin. And I laughed. I couldn't help but laugh because it is so wildly distracting for everything that's going on the screen. Because at that point, I don't know what, like, are you packing it up because you're getting on an airplane? Is that the subtext, the overt text that we're going with here? Pack it up, pack it in, step back or take it on the chin. Like, whose theme is this? Is this the lab agent's theme? I don't know. Yeah, hard to say. That aside, the chuckling aside, I did like the very end because playing very much into the classic Fugitive or Incredible Hulk type ending, where our, you know, our beloved hero that finally gets along with the, you know, with our main hero, and they're finally creating a cohesive team, and he's finally accepting of her, but she has to break the news to her that she's moving on to the next town because it's not safe for her here. And we get some sad piano music. We get more of the "I'm so, so fly" that comes in sort of like, you know, very, very gently at the end, but we get some sad piano music that kind of plays up the tone of like, this is a bittersweet moment. So I, you know what, I take the music for what it is now. It's like watching an episode of Zeta and like trying to grade the music on a curve with that. You know, you kind of got to let this breathe on its own and do its own thing. I'm not gonna crap on it. I'm going to take it for what it is. And I'm going to say the music fit the episode for the most part. I laughed at that, the Take It on the Chin song. I ended up giving music a 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went a little bit stronger. I went 8 out of 10 for my music score. I love it. I love the static music. Like we've had this argument before, not really an argument, but a disagreement of why I just think it works. I don't think it would work for any other show, but I think it works for static. And I love it when it's just literal, like in the Hot Streak theme or in the Shebang theme. And I also love when it's just kind of like, well, this sounds good here. Like, well, we just need like something that's kind of like building some menace to our soundtrack, like in the airplane sequence there. And then we'll mention there I think they do a great job of incorporating the static theme. It was the season 2 theme song, but that's still used as his theme for the rest of the series when he's kind of taken down by the one guard once he gets onto the plane and then is able to just free Shebang, and then Static and Shanice work together to take down the guard. They bring in the static theme pretty well there as well. So I always enjoy when they work in the hero theme like that as well. So adored the music this week as I usually do.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, our final category, in fact, of the day, which is going to be voice acting. And of course, not a huge cast this week as we didn't have a ton of characters, actually, maybe more than I assumed that there would be, but a lot of small parts, a few lines, and then we've got really the main spotlight on just a couple of our voice actors and actresses from this week. So let's go ahead and break down our voice cast from this week.
Yeah, I've got some familiar supporting characters in small roles. Danica McKellar, once again, as Frida, and Crystal Scales as Daisy. Also have briefly Danny Cooksey returning as Hot Streak, all good in their little minor roles. Playing Shanice's parents, we have Pamela Tyson playing her mom, Dolores, and playing her dad is someone you probably would recognize, that being Phil Morris, probably most famous to DCEU fans as the voice of Vandal Savage. Quite a bit of live action and voiceover work to his credit, including he was Martian Manhunter on Smallville. Good to see him pop up there. But then, yeah, our main three, of course, we have Jason Marsden as Gear, albeit a bit of a reduced role for him this week. But we have Rosalind Taylor Jordan voicing Shebang, and I didn't see a lot of credits to her name on the always reliable IMDb. Actually seems to have done a lot more work behind the scenes, as a lot of her credits on IMDb are as a casting director for the last few years, but has also done a few other minor voiceover jobs over the years as well. But as you already kind of mentioned, Cal, Miss Jordan's really got a lot to do, because she not only is she a main character of this episode coming in as a guest star, we talk all the time about how tough that can be, but also she's got the dual identity, and as you mentioned, Shebang and Shanice, at least at the start of the episode, are really quite, she has to play them really quite differently as Shanice is sort of this reserved and quiet, trying not to draw attention to herself, sort of wallflower, whereas Shebang is very boisterous and confident and kind of ready to show the world what she can do. So she's got a lot to do, and she has quite a bit of variety in the emotions she has to tell, both in those sequences and then towards the end of the episode when she's kind of being menaced by these agents and when she kind of feels like all hope is lost. So they ask a lot of her for a guest star, but I think she rises to the occasion pretty well.
Yeah, I think that if you just were to take the Shanice performance in a vacuum and not really understand the character, it would be easy to be critical of that performance because it's mm-hmm. very understated, very dry, very, it sounds like she's bored, sad, doesn't show a lot of emotion. It's emotionless. But when you take into consideration the character, as we've talked about several times already, this is a character who's being suppressed, who's, you know, it's a candle being put under a basket, essentially. You're not allowed to do the thing. She's not allowed to express herself and be the superhero that she wants to be. So she's depressed. She's sad. She's mm-hmm. She's not living life to the fullest. She's not using all of her gifts to make the world a better place. She's being forced to kind of hide and she doesn't like it. So because of that, and some of it is intentional also, as we learned, because she's trying not to draw attention to herself. She needs to be like, so quiet and out of the spotlight that she doesn't get noticed by anybody else. Because if she gets discovered, then it's possible that she, you know, she draws attention to herself and the lab discovers that she's who they're looking for. So all of that is done very, very well, I think, because when you look at who she is when she's Shebang, she's outgoing, she's super cocky. She gives, you know, she's got this repartee that she does both with Hot Streak and Static and Gear. She gives as much as she gets. I think that's, you know, her performance is exactly what was needed for this character when you look at it as a whole. She perfectly communicates the dichotomy of her two sides, her who she is when she's a superhero, enjoying life, enjoying being able to use her powers, enjoying being able to help people, versus this, no, you got to be a regular teen, but even more so, not even just a regular teen, you got to be like a hidden, quiet, docile, out of the way teen that doesn't really even draw attention and isn't really the focal point of attention. So yeah, I think her performance does really well at communicating that. I thought it was excellent, especially for somebody who, as you mentioned, doesn't have a lot on resume as far as actual voice acting. Man, like, way to go. Like, you had your one shot and you hit a grand slam. Like, way to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like you said, a lot asked of her, especially, yeah, someone that isn't quite as seasoned as some of our other regulars that we talk about every week on this show. And yeah, she, a lot was asked of her and I think she did a great job with it. And of course, rounding out our cast is the great Phil LaMarr as Static, who he also has a lot to do in this episode because our villains are like these two nameless, faceless agents. Like,
wait a minute, you're not going to talk about Charlie Rocket, aka Crew Cut, aka the guy that voiced Rob, the mutant from the Dark Knight Returns bit from Legends of the Dark Knight episode? Come on, he's
well may Mr. Rocket rest in peace. Yes, unfortunately no longer with us. Also had some on-screen roles and things like Dumb and Dumber and Dances with Wolves, to your point. So certainly a name worth mentioning, if for no other reason than his name is Charlie Rocket. How can you not?
But his character's name is literally Crew Cut. Right?
Yes. Yes, Crew Cut and Pilot are our two bad guys in this episode. But yes, Phil LaMarr as Static in this episode gets a lot to do, because like we said, we kind of set it up like he's kind of almost the bad guy for the first half of this episode, because he's being so kind of stubborn and kind of refusing to admit that that Shebang knows what she's doing and is kind of all standoffish and territorial with her. And then he has to kind of shift gears and become a bit more of a, you know, more sensitive and more understanding when when he and Gear are talking with Shanice's parents after she's been taken, and then when he kind of rises up and saves the day at the end. He's like I said, it's definitely Shebang's episode first and foremost, but unsurprisingly perhaps Phil LaMarr you know, in maybe more of a supporting role this week, but still bringing it through, no surprise to us.
Yep. I think he does exactly what was asked of him, and even a little more, as you mentioned, having to balance that idea of some professional jealousy in the way that, you know, this new person coming in, showing him up, taking credit for doing, you know, handling some bad guys, doing it with ease, impressing the media, impressing Richie, you know, so there's some jealousy that's happening there. And then you get the conversations between him and Jason Marsden's Richie that of course are always great. Their repartee between the two of them. And then, as you mentioned, you know, some of the gentler, more quiet moments that he gets with Miss Taylor Jordan's shebang. So yeah, I think it's unsurprisingly a really good effort from Mr. LaMarr, and you know, especially in an episode where he was asked to sort of much like Static take the back seat a little bit, it did not show up in his performance as any professional jealousy from Mr. LaMarr. So unsurprisingly, of course, consummate professional.
Absolutely. So for all those reasons, like I said, a really strong performance from our guest actor and from some of our regulars as well. I ended up giving voice acting another very strong 8 out of 10.
Nice. And I actually went 1 point higher. I went with a 9 out of 10 for it. I think it's really strong based solely on that performance from Miss Taylor Jordan, learning that it's, you know, this is one of her first and only acting credits, also voice acting credits, is also pretty impressive. You know, took it up just another notch there for me. So both of us giving voice acting a relatively high score here with our 9 and our 8. All right, Liam, so let's total things up here. Once we get everything totaled up here at the end, I end up giving this episode a pretty strong 32 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and I ended up a point higher at 33 out of 40. So
wow.
High scores from both of us. Probably one of our higher rated Static episodes to date, if I had to guess.
Definitely, especially one that didn't feature a special guest from member of the DCAU, like another hero from the DCAU. I totally agree with you on that. It's a good sign, and I think as we talk about rewatchability here, based on the fact that this character comes back, as we spoiled early on in our episode here, I'd say that coupled with it being a really good rounded episode, I say, yeah, give me two thumbs up. If you're rewatching Static, this is an important episode for Static as a whole. And it's a character that's recurring. It comes back into play with another character that comes back later on. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, yeah, two thumbs up for rewatchability if you're watching Static episodes.
Absolutely, yeah. Slam dunk, important character to the series, and as we said, a pretty fun one to debut. I feel like kind of by design, our last few times through Static, we've been sticking to the early seasons to kind of knock those out. So I feel like, at least in my head, the seasons 3 and 4, we got maybe Static was allowed to mature a little bit more with its audience. And I think this is a great example of, like you said, it's not necessarily relying on a special guest star or, as we said, even like a big bombastic action, you know, a lot of big bombastic action sequences. Like I said, it's a really fun story. You got some twists and turns, and you got a lot of characters that are likable and that you root for to find a happy ending at the end. So a lot to like across our four categories, as we've just spoken about.
Absolutely. And that will begin to wrap us up for this week's episode. Thank you everybody for tuning in. A very special thanks to Mr. Len Yuli, who lent his time to us. Don't forget, we will be including more excerpts from our full length interview with next week's episode, and then we will be dropping the entire conversation with Mr. Yuli by the end of the month as a bonus episode right here on the same feed that you listen to this podcast. And on the Pod Tower YouTube channel. So be sure to check that out. While you're anticipating that episode from dropping, we encourage you to go ahead and subscribe to us, whether it is at the Pod Tower YouTube channel or on your favorite podcast app like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. If it allows you to leave a review or interact with the podcast in some way, like leaving a 5-star review or maybe drop a comment on one of our videos on the podcast or Pod Tower YouTube channel, please do. Any interaction with us wherever our podcast lays is good for us. It's good for the podcast. It tells those algorithms that people are listening and that they should push it out to more people to listen. So we greatly appreciate it. If you want to leave us a 5-star review, that helps us on your favorite podcast app. Or if there's a spot like on Apple Podcasts that allows you to leave a little blurb about what you like about the podcast, or maybe you don't like about the podcast, feel free to do that and send it our way. Send it to us via our social media at DCAU Review, both on Twitter and Instagram, or X and Instagram, whatever you want to call it. You could also send it on Threads or Facebook, but we use those social media platforms far less often than we do Instagram or Twitter. So send that review our way if you do, and we may just have a little thank you gift for you. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, there's a couple ways to do that. There are links in the show notes for both ways to do so. One is through our merchandise store. You can head over and check that out. Get yourself a shirt or a mug or a sticker. You can also support us by subscribing monthly to our podcast and supporting us. We have several people that do that, and we're grateful for them giving their hard-earned dollars every single month to us just so that Liam and I can buy a coffee while we do these podcasts. So thank you to our monthly supporters, and if you want to join them, check out the show notes. Liam, we have gone through all of our housekeeping and social media plugs. Don't forget, follow us at DCAU Review. Share your thoughts for this episode, as well as your thoughts on our tidbits with Mr. Yuli, if you'd like to. But Liam, as we mentioned, next week we'll be continuing with our theme here of episodes written by Mr. Yuli, and we have another interesting one next week.
That's right. And speaking of Shebang, you already teased it a couple of times. This was not her last appearance in the series, and we will be picking things up next week with her second appearance in the series, that being in the episode Parent Trap. No twins or Lindsay Lohan to be found here, but a pretty fun episode featuring a really strong Ron Perlman voice performance, unsurprisingly. So lots to get into with that episode next week. Can't wait.
And as promised, a few more tidbits for Mr. Yuli. You will not want to miss it. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.